All right. So, first a preamble. So this is about PowerPoint. I'm Ash Morgan. I'm a development lead on PowerPoint. There's a false myth that everybody thinks everybody who works on PowerPoint creates great presentations. Right? No one thinks that people who work on Word are excellent authors, Pulitzer Prize-winning, you know, writers. No, but everybody who works on PowerPoint obviously creates beautiful presentations every time. I'm an engineer. Okay, not a designer, but for you guys, I do my best. So, but that's the preamble. All right. Oh, quick show of hands. How many people are engineers in the room? Know your for loops from your while loops? Everybody. Okay, good. Otherwise, you're going to get lost really fast. So that's good. How many people have read all 702 pages of MS-PPT? Oh, come on. I've read it twice, three times, lots of times. I wrote it too. So, okay. How many people have read MS Doc? Yeah. Okay. How many people think MS PPT is way easier to understand than MS Doc? No, really?
We're about to find out.
All right. All right. So, about me. Yeah, you know, you got to do what you can. So I do lots of things besides write code. I've worked on PowerPoint for the last 12 years, various other little side things that weren't exactly PowerPoint in between that. Nice little app called Picture Manager that never got any good press, but it's a wonderful picture editing app. I do a lot of martial arts, as you can see. I teach Aikido, and I study Takamura Shindo Yoshinru. If you don't know what they are, it's fine. All that means to you is they're two different kinds of jammies that you get to wear to do everything. I'm a rock climber. Spent a lot of time rock climbing. Recently just came back from Half Dome, climbing up Half Dome. That was a lot of fun. But you'll notice that, you know, I'm a little bit, you know, strange in that I hiked in and out in my flip-flops. These ones in particular. A little strange, you know. I'm just like, really? You're going to go hiking in flip-flops? But yeah, it works. Saves your heels, right? Because then you don't have boots on and everything. It just requires good balance. And I also do a lot of photography. Take a lot of pictures. My second passion. And I'm a gamer. So if you want to talk gaming later, we can do that too. That's enough about me. History of PowerPoint. So I've worked on these last five releases of PowerPoint. It's been pretty much a wild ride. Some things to know about PowerPoint and the file format. We used to change the file format every release. Like PowerPoint 3 had its own file format, PowerPoint 4 had a different file format, PowerPoint 5 had a different format, 97 had a different file format, and we were starting to do the same thing for PowerPoint 2000. And then the customer said, you can't do that. We have too many files that are in this old format, and we need to, you can't change the file format. Like, it was bizarre, and so we didn't. But yet, we had new features, and we had to put them in the file somewhere. So we got creative, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. That's where all the prog tags are. Prog tag stands for programmable tags, but we hijacked them for extending the file format release to release, which, well, it worked, but it wasn't really what the prog tags were designed for, so it was a bit of a hack. Beyond that, the file format, of course, it was never designed to be public. It was our own internal format. You know, we didn't plan to document it like we've done, much like Words. If we would have designed something to be documented for everybody else, we maybe would have done a better job. That said, it's reasonably sane. But it wasn't designed for lots of things that you would design a file format today. It wasn't designed for security. It was mostly designed around performance. In fact, it was actually designed to be the simplest way to get bits in memory to bits on disk, and bits on disk to bits in memory. And if you look at it, that's what a lot of the records are, just binary dumps of C++ objects, which is what PowerPoint is written internally in. And we just, you know, take it and we go, serialize, please, and just spit it out to disk. That's why there's random holes in some various structures. Like, why is there a hole here for 2 bytes? Why is there a 1-byte hole here that says unused? Like, that was the packing byte in the C++ data structure, right? So it's just like, they're hiding something there. Microsoft not documenting. No, it really is just goo that was sitting in the structure in memory and then spit it out to disk, and away it goes. So it's it wasn't designed so much as it evolved. So there's a lot of stuff in the file format you don't care about, unless you're trying to clone an old version of PowerPoint. Like if you're trying to be PowerPoint 2000 or PowerPoint 2002 or 2003, then there's stuff in there that you might care about. But if you're just trying to be as cool as the latest version of PowerPoint, there's a ton of crap, literally crap, in the binary file format that you don't care about because it's been, you know, obsoleted, it's been cut, and you don't need to be as generous about loading all that old stuff that PowerPoint is, unless you really want to try to write a PowerPoint clone competitor, and you shouldn't because it's hard. All right, any questions about history of PowerPoint? You can feel free to stop me with questions anytime, and if I don't know the answer, I'll just ignore you. I'll try to answer it or find out the answer for you. No? Everybody good? All right. So if you're working with a file format, some things are really easy. Things like taking a file on disk and extracting the text out of it. It's pretty simple. In fact, I'll go through an example of it later to just show you how easy it is. Strangely enough, the code to do it, I had to cheat a little bit, fits on one slide. And you should be able to read it from the back of the room. Well, maybe not if you have bifocals, but everybody else should be able to read it from the back of the room. Other things, grabbing a file and trying to extract all the pictures from it, not too hard. Pictures are all stored in a separate little stream, it's not too hard to understand. So if you just want to grab the sort of media out of a file, it's pretty easy. Some things are really hard to do, and I wouldn't recommend it. Trying to take a file and render it the way PowerPoint does, really frickin' hard, okay? It took the entire PowerPoint team, plus the shared graphics team, plus the shared office teams, which is about 40 to 50, maybe pushing 60 developers, last 20 years to create PowerPoint that we know and love, and you do love it, right? Right? Yeah, okay. That we love today, right? So you're trying to replicate 60, 120 man years of work. That's not going to happen overnight. So and you can always cut corners, right, here and there, but doing this is hard. It's a lot of work, and it'll take you time. So generally I wouldn't recommend it unless you really want to enter PowerPoint clone competitor space, or very at least start with maybe OpenOffice's code. It's not that good. So I hear I can't look at it because that would cause problems. But the app itself. Yeah. Other things that are hard, trying to take C++ code and create a file from scratch. Yeah, also not so easy. You can do it, and documentation helps. Of course, the documentation that you have now is a million times better than the documentation we used to give you, which was, I think, maybe 20 pages. from 20 pages to 702 pages, complete with examples and everything. So it's certainly possible now, but it's still really hard. Even for the most basic presentations where you just want a single slide and, couple shapes with some text in them, there's a lot of detail and a lot of records you have to go through. And, of course, you have to understand not only MSPPT, but you also have to understand MSODraw for all the shared shapes and drawing. And it's a lot. So you can do it, but it's hard. Okay? Questions? Yeah. Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
I suppose it's you have a different format for the audio.
Different format than... Oh, okay.
For example, we have our primary work is extraction of embedded objects to check them against for the malware.
Okay.
For the PowerPoint, it's pretty hard to do.
To get the Ole object data, it's actually not that bad.
Depending on what version of PowerPoint.
No, it's the same, of course, for all versions of PowerPoint, how to get to your Ole objects. Oh, you mean MSPPT documents, like older, like 95 files and PowerPoint 4 files. Yeah, yes, those are different. They do things differently. PowerPoint 95 files look They're similar in structure and intent to 97 files. They have different records. The record header is a little different, but the design is familiar. So if you understand the 97 format, reading the existing documentation, which is not as extensive as the 97 formats, you could suss it out. PowerPoint 4 file format, I don't even know how it works. That predates my time at Microsoft. So if you have questions about PowerPoint 4, sorry, I can't answer. I know nothing about PowerPoint 4. I only know about that much about PowerPoint 95. But I know enough that PowerPoint 95 is similar enough to 97 that if you understand 97 and you read the documentation for 95, you'll figure it out. But PowerPoint 4, completely different from what I understand. Bears no resemblance, and yeah, I don't know anything about it. So can't help you on PowerPoint 4. Yeah?
So you said generating new files is hard. How about updating pieces of existing files?
Depends on what you want to do. So it's not quite as bad as Word, where if you just want to insert one character, all of a sudden it throws your entire police table off and your sperm. They have weird names for things in Word. We try not to be quite so strange, though we have our own sort of things. We have our persist objects and everything else. Some things you can do, like if you want to edit text and keep the same amount of text in there, that's, of course, pretty easy. Just flop the characters around, things that'll work fine. So it's really great if you just want to do, like, redaction. It's like, oh, I just want to replace this string with a bunch of spaces or with a bunch of dashes or with something else. Like, that works pretty easy. Other things might be more difficult. You could shrink and grow the text as long as you know how to fix up the record links, because, you know, there's all the record header that tells you the record links and, of course, all the offsets shift. It's not too bad. Right, you just have to say, oh, this record grew, and so that means all these other offsets shift, and you got to move everything around. But if you at least have a structure of a memory model of where the structures live, then updating those offsets isn't too bad. It's not as complicated as Word. Trying to create it all from scratch is a little tricky. But yeah, going in there and mucking with just things like, oh, I want to change the color on this shape from orange to green. Oh, okay, that's not too bad. Right, so limited modification if you're just sort of changing a property value from one thing to the other, but like adding whole new shapes, that's kind of tricky. You got to get everything right, got to get the IDs right. It's hard. All right, other questions? No? Okay. So, what lives inside of this? There's a whole bunch of storages, well, a whole bunch of streams inside the OLE storage. These are the big ones. That you care about. There's some other ones related to digital signatures, and there's summary info, and there's the encrypted summary info, and there's probably three or four other ones. They're all listed in the documentation, but for the most part, you don't care about them unless you're interested in metadata extraction. And if you're interested in metadata extraction, I'll tell you almost all the metadata in a file is wrong, so probably not worth very much for you anyway. Not that it's like bad, just that it probably doesn't reflect the reality that you wanted to extract from it. I learned that from our search guys who told us, like, yeah, all the metadata in your files is wrong. It's like, okay. So I wouldn't rely on it for anything like, oh, the metadata says the author was Ash Morgan. Well, maybe it was. Maybe I was just the first person who created the file, and then somebody else came and edited it, you know, later, create a whole new file, but my author name got persisted in the metadata and wasn't updated. So, like, those sort of things happen. But anyway, the three main streams that you care about, current user item, this is where you start. Then all the stuff that you really care about in terms of content lives inside the PowerPoint document stream. And then if you care about pictures, there's a bunch of records in the picture stream describing all the various images that live in the file, which at least is a little bit simpler than Word in that all the pictures, except for image holders for picture bullets, yeah, but you don't care about those pictures, live in the picture delay stream, and that you don't have to go and hunt other places to find the pictures. That's why finding all the pictures is pretty simple. You just flip through the picture stream and you can go get it. Inside the PowerPoint document stream, we have all these persist objects. So something to know about the PowerPoint format is we supported incremental save. So when you open a file, you edit it, you hit save, we wrote a whole bunch of records and put the user edit at them at the end. And then if you wanted to change something, instead of rewriting the whole thing from scratch, we had fast save, which, well, was fast. where we just wrote the modified and new persist records. So things like we'd rewrite the document container, we'd rewrite any slides that you modified, and we'd shove another persist directory at him and user edit at him at the end and say, yep, okay, here's your new edit. And things later in the file superseded things early in the file, and works pretty well. Works great from a performance standpoint. Users save fast. It was great. Wasn't the best solution from a robustness standpoint. Caused a lot of bugs where parts of the file should have gotten rewritten out, and they didn't, and things got corrupted. So it caused file corruption problems for us. It's also not very good from a security PII standpoint, right? You delete a slide, you resave your deck, you have fast saves turned on, you think the slide's gone, it's really embarrassing. Turns out it's still in there, someone can go and find it if they walk through the file. Oops, yeah, not so good. So we had some internal logic that tried not to let this just grow infinitely. It's like, man, I have a one-slide presentation that's 200 megs. Like, what happened? Well, you saved a whole bunch of times. So it wasn't that bad. We'd start to trim it when we saw that the size of the records got too big. But still, there's a bunch of crap in here that isn't exactly part of the file. It's not a live record. And so there's a whole 60-step process. I'm sure you've all read the 60-step process that describes how you find all the live records in the document. And it's an incremental process that you have to go through. Questions about that? No? Make sense? Yeah. Okay. So, this is where it gets technical. So no more pretty pictures. Now you get bubble diagrams, as we lovingly refer to these guys. This is a variation on the images that show up in the documentation. The documentation makes them look ugly. Mine are pretty, partly because, well, I take the original that we use, and then the documentation sort of morphs them into things slightly less pretty. So the record header, this is the most important structure in the whole documentation because it tells you what everything is, right? So it sits at the front of every record and tells you a bunch about things, right? So this particular record header is the record header for, anybody know what FF6 is? I'll show your MSPPT creds if you know the hex codes. No. This is the current user Adam record header. So this is the first record header that you'd look at. For the most part, this is the thing that you care about, the record type, because that'll tell you what type of record, and you can go look up in the documentation. It's like, oh, it has these other things in it. The other thing that's probably interesting is the recver. So almost all of this is zero, unless it's F. Anybody know what F means? Right? Anybody? I see a head nodding. So what does F mean when you see a record version F, right? No one wants to say, you're too embarrassed. That's okay. It usually, and I say usually, means that it's a container record, which means it has other records sitting underneath it. So it's sort of like a parent in a tree of records. So the whole file format is very hierarchical, right? You have container records, they contain atom records and other container records, and those container records contain other atom records, and it's a tree, very hierarchical, matches the data structure that we have in memory, which is hierarchical. You have a document, you have slides, you have shapes, it's a big tree. Okay. Usually a recver of F means it's a container record. But read the documentation carefully. We screwed up a couple times. We write the wrong value here. So we know like the record was a container record or an atom record independent of looking at it because we recognized the record type, and so we ignored this. But usually it's F, but read the documentation. Reckling, of course, tells you how many bytes there are. So this is useful if you want to skip the record because you don't care what's in it. So if it's an atom record, you can just skip all of its contents. If you seek reckling forwards from a container record, you skip all the records that sort of live underneath it. So you probably don't want to do that if you want to see the records inside of it to maybe keep looking for other stuff. Questions about record header? Nope. Okay. So this is then the rest of the current user edit atom record. And has a whole bunch of stuff in it, of which most of it you don't care about. Because this value is always the same. This value is almost always the same. You need that. This value is always the same. This value is always the same. This value is always the same. This is unused. And this value is always the same. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that's always fixed. it was designed maybe that it would have changed, right? But we weren't allowed to change the file format. So we didn't ever change these things. So there's a bunch of crap in here that you don't care about. What you do care about is this guy, the offset to the current edit, because that will tell you how to find the last user edit atom in that stream. You might assume that it's the last user edit atom in the stream, and that's probably right. But technically, you have to go look here, because somebody could write the file differently. It's not a requirement that it actually be the last record in the stream. So you have to go look at the offset to the current edit, which will tell you where to go find that user edit atom record. Other thing you might care about, if you're interested in metadata extraction, would be the Unicode username or the equivalent ANSI one, which they should generally match. This started getting written out in PowerPoint 2000 when we started to have better Unicode support for East Asian and other non-ANSI character sets. So if you're interested in usernames, it'll at least tell you the username of the last person who saved the file. So sometimes that's useful information to have. Questions about the current user atom? You guys have been hacking, you already know about this, right? Makes sense, right? It's easy. Yeah, good. All right, so if we go to the offset of the last edit from the last record, we go find this user edit atom record. And again, there's a bunch of crap in here that you probably don't care about because it all stays the same. Like, this stays the same, this stays the same, this is the same. This is always one. This might move, but you probably don't care about it. And this is like the last view that PowerPoint was saved in, whether it was slide view or like slideshow view or slide sort of view. And again, unless you're trying to write a PowerPoint clone, you don't care. Even if you did, you probably wouldn't want to use our stupid behavior because guess what? We ignore this too. But what you do care about is, again, the offset to the last edit. That's how you find the chain. That's how you walk back to find the last edit. Incidentally, here's a dirty little secret. You can use this to basically roll back versions of your file if there's incremental save records. You can basically walk the last chain, chop off everything at the end, and start with the previous user edit atom and treat that as a new file, and you, ta-da, have the previous version of the file before it was saved. It's kind of cool. We had, versioning capabilities that even we didn't know about. But it basically works. You might run into some issues with like the pictures delay stream because it's not similarly versioned, but for the most part it works, especially for all the main PowerPoint content. So if you want to roll back and see what somebody had there before and they have incremental save records, you can do it. Sneaky. The other big thing that you need to know about is the persist directory, which will tell you how to find all the other crap in the file. I mean, stuff, shapes, slides in the file. And it's very important to walk the persist directory correctly. Otherwise, you won't find, you'll grab an old version of a persist object and, well, things will be bad. Questions about user edit atom? No? Good. All right. So here's the persist directory atom. This is probably one of the more complicated data structures in the file format, except for maybe text formatting, which is probably the most complicated piece of the file format that you care about. So the persist directory atom is sort of this compressed thing because we were really concerned with file size back in 97. So it's not designed for easy readability. And again, it wasn't designed for anyone. If you have the code that reads and writes this, like, it's easy. Trying to document it was hard. So there's a whole bunch of entries that go through, and the first entry is like, this is the persist ID that starts this block, and then it has a count of persist IDs in the block. And basically, they're sequential. So this is basically broken down into sequential sequences of persist IDs. And then what follows is the offsets for that. So this guy has one persist, there's one offset. This has one, so there's only one. But this guy has two, and so the first persist ID hex 13 has this offset, and then hex 14 has this offset. That makes sense, right? So it's it saves us from having to write out the persist IDs multiple times because they're all sequential. And for some reason, we thought this was more efficient, and it is a little bit because most of the time your persist IDs are in order, and so sometimes this all just fits in one nice big table, at least for the first save. So we talked about that. That's what you care about. You care about how many persists there are, and then you care about the offsets. And you can use this to start building up a table of where all the persist objects live. And then you go to the next entry, and you do the same thing. You can do the same thing again. So this is what we get. Parsing the first persist directory atom is we find four persist objects, 1, 6, 13, 14, with these offsets into the document stream. So far, so good. Questions? Good. All right. So moving back, so if we hop back to the user edit atom from the last user edit atom record, we get this guy. And you'll see that the offset to the last edit is 0, meaning, hey, we're done. We're at the end of the chain, so there's nothing else going on. And again, you'll find the offset to the persist directory, which you'll need to look to find the rest of the stuff in the file. Which then gives you the next persist directory atom. And again, it looks very similar. Yeah. Some of the values on the right look like they're persist. C persist, yeah, is 12 bits. So yeah, 3 bytes. Or a byte and a half. Right, 8, yeah. Yeah, this guy and this guy get shoved into 32 bits into a 4-byte value. So that's why when you're reading, these have the same offset. And then this is the first 20 bits and this is the last 12 bits. So yeah, we packed the persist ID, which is limited to 20 bits. That means you can only have to the 20th persist objects in your file, because we run out of persist IDs. Of course, that's a lot of objects in a file. You're limited to 4 gigabytes in the total file size anyway, because all the offsets are 32-bit, so you can't have files bigger than 4 gigabytes anyway. And practically speaking, I'm not sure our signed, unsigned math is completely correct everywhere, so maybe 2 gig is a upper limit. It's really hard to get a 2-gigabyte PowerPoint file, because you can't really embed super big objects. I mean, you can embed OLE objects, and those can get really big, I guess. But it's not like PowerPoint 2010, where you can embed media. You can embed, you know, DVD video, HD video, and those can be 4 gigs easy. Boom, you know, your file is huge. Right? So you couldn't embed video in the binary file format, only link to it. So no embedding for video. So it's pretty hard to get those big files. Yeah, something specific about that, or just... Okay, cool. So this is the persist directory atom for the first one in the file. And so you see that, for the most part, there's 9 persists that all go in order here, because this was the first save. So assuming that I didn't delete any persist objects while I was editing, like I insert a slide and then I delete it, most of the time this will just be one entry, set of entries. But in this case, when the file was created, there's a gap. So this one went through persist IDs 1 through 9, and then 10. A was skipped, and then we start with B. So whatever had persist object A existed at one time, but it got deleted before the first save, and so there's a gap. And then you'll see that there's one, and then C is also a gap. So again, whatever that one was, there's a gap. And then D starts, and then there's 6 objects here at the end. Finds everything. Right? Make sense? So far? Okay. So this then is the complete persist directory table for this file. And as you see, we go through, there's a gap between 9 and B, and then there's a gap BC, and then DEF, and all the way through. We don't really know what these things are yet unless you go and parse the record headers that live at these persist objects. That's how you can actually find out that, well, you know this is a document container, because the document container also has persist ID 1. But you don't know what pretty much anything else is until you go in and process it. Okay? Questions so far? So if you go and do that for this particular sample file, which happens to be the sample file that's used throughout the MSPPT documentation, probably didn't mention. If somebody wants the actual presentation that all the examples are based off of, I can give it to you. I tried to publish it with the documentation, but they wouldn't let me. But maybe we can get it posted someplace for people to have. You'd probably find that helpful, because I thought it'd be helpful. It's like, here, I'll give you the presentation. No, we can't do that. Oh, okay. Developers try to do the right thing, and then politics get in the way. So, but yeah, for you guys, you can have it. So anyway, so you have the document container, then you had your main master, a whole bunch of slides, some notes, and then this guy's special, because you'll notice it has persist ID 6. This guy has persist ID 6. So this guy supersedes this guy. So this guy's dead. He's a dead record. Because this guy comes in the second user edit atom that overwrote that. So if you just parse the stream from front to back, you might think that this guy wins and this guy doesn't, or you just get confused. You don't know which one's right unless you walk things in order according to the documentation. Same thing with the document container, right? So this guy supersedes that one because it comes later. We always rewrite the document container every time because the document container needs to write out the slide lists and the master lists and all that information. So every user edit always contains a rewrite of the document container. It'll always contain a persist directory atom and a user edit atom. And then usually it'll contain one or more slide or notes or Olay object persist atoms depending on what got changed or added or things. One thing that's a little tricky to understand is when something gets deleted outright, again, it still stays in the file, but there's nothing that tells you from what we've done so far which things are actually deleted. Like one of these slides is actually a dead record as well, because it wasn't superseded like ID6 was, where we just wrote a new version of it. It was just deleted from the file, well, as far as the user thinks. It's still in here. I think it's this one. I don't remember. It's in the documentation. But the only way you can find out that it's dead is you have to go and look at the document container, find the slide list with text record, parse through the slide list with text record to find the slide persist atoms, and realize that there is no slide persist atom whose references persist ID, I'm going to make up which one it is, 9. Therefore, persist ID 9 slide container is a dead record because it's not referenced in the slide list contained by the document container. Now it's in this guy's slide list because it was part of this one, but it's not in the most recent document container slide list, so you're supposed to ignore it and consider it deleted. Unless you're looking for hidden information, in which case go and look at it all you want, right? So
the data for the deleted slides
Yeah, if fastsaves are turned on, we generally just append. Again, as I said, there's some algorithms. We will sort of do a full save every now and then just so this doesn't grow super, super long. The question. Haha. Oh, nice science. That's awesome. The question was whether when the user saves, things just get added at the end and the other stuff stays in the file. And for the most part, it does. Our own little internal algorithm hits and says, oh, the size of the file versus the number of persist records we're writing has the wrong ratio, and so we rewrite everything from scratch and the other data goes away. Incidentally, this is also a feature that was on by default in early versions of PowerPoint. Later we realized this created corruption, so we turned it off by default in some later versions of PowerPoint, and starting with 2007, you cannot incrementally save PowerPoint files. They always get rewritten from scratch because they get converted when they get saved because we have a cool new XML-based file format that you should use if you want to write new files. That's the answer for creating files from scratch. Don't create binary files from scratch. Create XML files from scratch. It's way easier. Way easier. Like, I can't even explain how much easier it is to create XML. You can even write them in Notepad, and it's faster than trying to write a binary file from scratch. That's how much easier the XML file format is. Okay. Other questions? No? Bored yet? No? Okay, good. All right. So now we get into really techie stuff. Code. So as promised, this is a small program No, you cannot get this source code for reasons that I will explain later, but you'll understand the gist of it, and we're going to sort of walk through it. So this is a piece of code that will extract all the text from a file, so all the text records, no matter where they are in the file, main masters, notes, in shapes, in the outline, doesn't matter where they are, it finds all the text records in the document. So we do this by opening up storage. So this is just Win32 API call. This is the file we're opening. Flags don't really matter so much, except you need read access. And like good programs, we check our results to see if things failed, and we bail. This little check result macro is down here. It basically just checks if it fails, and if so, it throws an exception out, because we like exceptions, because we're PowerPoint, and we're exception people, which most of the Office apps aren't. This causes points of contention in the development org, but we're right and they're wrong, so it doesn't matter. Yeah?
Missed C-string.
Oh, in terms of the text in the document?
Yeah,
oh, sure. Yeah, so the question is, I missed C-string as one of the text things. Yeah, when I mean text, I mean user-entered text, so things that people have typed into shapes or and things like that are on the notes page. Yes, there's other textual content that might be part of various records, like file paths that we store, or, yeah, usually file paths, other file names, other like text content. Yeah, so if you wanted to find those, then you could add the C-string record type here as well. Yeah, this is just trying to find the user-entered text. But if you want all text content, like you're writing a search index or something, you're trying to extract anything that's textual that you can index, then yeah, there's a couple other records you'd want to add that you could grab content from. Good question. Any other questions so far? Okay. So once we open storage, then we go through and we try to open a stream. We open the PowerPoint document stream. Notice this code ignores the current user stream, because I'm going to cheat, because I don't really care what's alive or what's dead. I'm just going to start parsing the document stream at the beginning and go through it and look at all the record headers. Technically, it's cheating. You can't do that, because the document, you may not have a record at the beginning of the stream. The file format doesn't require that the document, that the first byte in the document stream be a record header, right? Because you're supposed to parse the persist directory table, find the offset to everything. So this is cheating. But if PowerPoint wrote the file, this works. If somebody else wrote the file, it may not work, because the documentation is free to do it. And PowerPoint doesn't follows the rules according to the documentation, so it'll write it even if you do something screwy, like put a bunch of garbage at the front of the PowerPoint document stream. But this is a simple code example, so we're going to cheat. So we're just going to open the document stream directly, and we're going to start parsing records. So these are the two ones we care about. We have text chars and text bytes. This is for Unicode characters, and then this is for ANSI characters, the lower 128. Mostly, again, to save space. Like, why do we have both? Like, well, we check before we write. It's like, oh, you don't use any extended characters. We can collapse all those 0 bytes in the middle down because, again, efficiency. More complicated for everybody else, but again, if you already have the code, it's easy. It's trying to recreate the code or the documentation that's hard. Questions? Okay. We go through our while loop, have a record header that looks like this. So record header has, 4 bits for the record version, 12 bits for the record instance, which for the most part you don't care. It's just used to distinguish different instances of the same Atom record in its parent container. And there's sometimes it's just ordered, and it doesn't really matter what the instance value is. Sometimes it does matter, and the documentation will tell you, oh, instance 1 is this thing, and instance 2 is this thing. But for the most part, it doesn't matter. All important record type, and then the record length. So a nice little helper class, conveniently zero initialized self in its constructor, because we like C++. So we have a record header, and then we try to read a record header out of the document stream, and the read method, nice handy little templates, because we like templates, because, right, templates, good, right, no? Okay. Tries to read into a pointer to the thing we gave it for the size of however big it was, and it captures how many bytes were read, and hey, if it didn't read the number of bytes that it was expecting, or if the stream failed for whatever reason, it says, ah! And throws an exception, and we abort, because we don't want to try to read things that aren't there. So then we look at the record type, and if it's text chars, then we allocate a new character array, wide character array, for the length of the record, which is always in bytes, so we divide it by 2 to get the number of characters, and then we add 1 so we can null terminate it, because it's not null terminated in the file itself. Because again, efficiency, why would you write a 0 byte there? You know how long it is, right? And then we read out of the stream those reclen bytes. You'd probably want to check the bytes that were read to see that it matches, but we're just going to rely on the document stream to tell us when it doesn't read the right number of bytes. So if it fails, we'll throw an exception. And then we'll just print it out to standard out, print the string out. And we'll delete our string because we don't want to leak memory, because that's bad. Else, if the record type is text bytes, we do the same thing, except we create a character array. We don't need to divide by 2 because bytes are bytes. But we still add 1. Do the same thing, read it out of the file, check the result, and we output it to standard out just for grins, and then we delete our character. And then we have, if it's anything else and the record version is F, we already talked how you can't really do this. You can mostly do this, but you can't really do it. We say, oh, this is a container record, so I'm just going to seek forward in the stream. If it's not a container record, I'm going to seek forward and skip the atom record that I don't care about, reclen bytes. Otherwise, I do nothing, because I've already seeked past the record header here, so then the next thing should just be another record header. And then I can keep my while loop going. And this will traverse everything in the file from front to back. And in theory, we should, instead of having a while true loop, we should be a little smarter and say, hey, while there's still space in the stream, because instead what happens is eventually we reach the end of the stream and it throws an exception saying, hey, end of stream. But again, this is sample code, so we don't really care. And then seek forward's down here. It just does what you expect it to. It seeks from the current position so many bytes forward. All right? Make sense? Easy, right? Right? Anybody notice all the bugs in this code, aside from the corners that I cut? You see a couple? Yeah? Anybody? Yeah? Want to point them out?
If you allocate plus 1 characters for your character array, you don't put a 0 at the end of it.
So the question is, so here I allocate characters and I put a plus 1, but I don't put the 0 byte at the end. Yeah, so my new allocator always 0 initializes all my memory, so I didn't have to do that. But yes, if yours doesn't, then you're right. You would need to do that. Good. I had that in there, and then I realized I didn't need it for my purposes. But yeah, good. Okay. Other problems with this code? See, so seemingly simple. No? Yeah? Right, so yeah, you're going to sometimes get duplicate text and records that aren't there, and so some things will be repeated more than once. Yep.
And the other thing is that there's no positioning information, so you're going to get content that may be semantically incorrect because you'll have text and next to each other that may not have actually been next to each other.
Yeah, there's no context for any of this text. You're just extracting text strings out of it and spitting it out to standard out. Yep, that's true. Any other things that you notice that might be wrong with this code? There's 3 really good gotchas. Tom? The endianness. Fortunately, endianness, well, you have to worry about it, I guess, if you're not on a little endian system. So this assumes, the file format assumes little endian. It's documented pretty much near the top of the file format. And, of course, most processors these days are little endian. Even the Macs are all little endian now, so yay. Big problem for the Mac PowerPoint team, actually, because they had to byte swap all over the frickin' place, so it was a pain. That's what we get for being Windows. We wrote the file format first, the Mac guys had to copy us, so they got the screwy byte swapping code. Except when they would write the file, they sometimes wouldn't byte swap, and then we had to byte swap their byte swaps, and boy, wasn't that a pain. Yeah, we sorted that one out in a hurry. Let me point out the really big gotchas. This is the first one. Anybody know what's wrong with this code? It's not the fact that it's not zero terminated, though that might be true. Yeah, well, that's right, because this is allocating a char, and this is allocating a W char, so that's fine. Because I want to know the number of elements for my array, right? But reckling is always in bytes. So no, that part's right. What else is wrong about that code? Yeah? Possible, but that's not what I'm going for. No, it's fine, right? Because this is bytes, so this converts bytes into characters, and I add one more character to create a W char star array, so that's okay. Okay, here's the answer. How long is the field? The field is a 4-byte value, so it can be up to 4 gigs. Yeah, it's unsigned. Yep. Okay, so yeah, it's pretty big, but it's still, it'll limit the maximum size of your file, obviously, to that. So that's close to what the problem with this code is, right? You got to put your black hat on. What if someone maliciously sets reckling to max D word? For example. File is syntactically correct. It's just malicious, right? There might actually be max D word bytes following. It could still be a well-formed file. The problem is when I add one, well, not so much, I guess, for this case, but more for that case, right? You know, max D word plus one gives me zero. New happily creates a 0-byte array for me. And then I try to read max D word bytes into memory from a stream controlled by somebody else, and I'm just going to start overwriting my heap. Oops! That should get hacked. Right? That goes back to, yeah?
And then you put my hand up there, it's a bug is equals to Java, and I'll see why.
Yeah, I mean, it's a problem. So the binary file format was not designed for security in any way, shape, or form, right? There's tons of data. We wrote it to be, again, that quick brain dump of get the data from memory onto disk and be able to get it back in. And when this was designed, I use the term loosely, in 97, security was not something that was part of the programming culture anywhere, right? There's no malicious people trying to create files, trying to take over your computer, right? That, you know, there were viruses, you know, but there was downloading people, getting people to download exes. This whole trying to find exploits in documents when loaded by legitimate programs to take over your machine, like, that whole space didn't exist, you know, 12 years ago, 13 years ago, 15 years ago when this was written. Of course, it was first released in 97. The what? There were macro viruses, sure. But even that was pretty much in its infancy back then. Yeah. We didn't think about these things. And so it was a long road to go back and fix the PowerPoint binary reading code to look for things like, oops, there's other weird things. Like, there's a subtle one here. That one up there has the max D word problem. But what happens if reckling is odd? Right? I divide by two. I chunk one thing off. Right? So I don't quite allocate enough space. And then I try to read more bytes that fit in. So basically, I overwrite my null terminating character because I allocated a little extra space. So I'm only off by one, but I read an extra byte, and I'm no longer null terminated. That'll do all sorts of funny things to your app. Usually make it crash. Right? So there's a lot of screwy things they have to be aware of. This is another one. So this we just naively use wcout and cout to put the strings on the console. But there's a bunch of stuff in those text bytes that may or may not be printable, right? There's non-printable characters, there's vertical tabs, there's line feeds, there's carriage returns, there's a bunch of stuff. And it doesn't necessarily bear, so if you just, you know, did this, like, it's like, what's this text, right? So I ran this program, just, of course, to make sure it would work. I'm looking at the output, and it's like, that's not right. And what it was doing is, because there were line feeds, and the way it got interpreted, it was just putting it back at the beginning of the line. It wasn't doing a carriage return and a line feed, it was just moving over. And so it just kept overwriting the same line 3 or 4 times with the same text. It's like, oh, that's strange. So you just have to be aware of it. Like, the bytes in memory are right, but then what you do with it may or may not be correct, right? You might need to process it, change tabs into something printable or whatever, depending on your purpose. And we talked about this one, right? Yeah. Yes. So the question. Yep. So the question is for the text bytes, Adam, which encoding is used? It is just your standard ASCII/ANSI 128, that lower half. It's just that simple. Maybe you can use all 255. I'd have to go look at. What's the documentation say? Oh, okay. Yep. Yep, so then there's your answer. Yeah, so yeah. That matches what I would write as a developer. Right? You're trying to write an optimization. It's like, oh, if all the high bytes are 0, I can collapse it. So you run through the strings like 0, 0, 0. Okay, cool. Chop, 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 and write what's left into the file. And then you know how to rehydrate and put 0 bytes back when you put it back in the file. So yeah, that's your answer. Yep, question. There you go. All right. Any more questions about the code? Questions overall for something I didn't cover? Can you a cookie? Yeah, now you're all hungry. It's time for lunch. See, I was lucky. I got the best slot of the whole day. I wasn't first. So, you know, suck to be Dan, right? Because he has to go first, and, you know, tough crowd, morning, all that. And I'm not after lunch, where you guys are all going to be in food coma, right? You're just going to, PowerPoint, right? So best slot of the day. So it's good for that. So other questions that I can answer now? And if they're really detailed, I'll answer them tomorrow. Yeah? The overwritten slides, okay. Pointers to the point that the text also invalidated. So all the text that lives on a slide. Oh, so the question is, when you overwrite a slide, whether the text is also invalidated at the same time, or whether the text might be back somewhere else. So the answer is no. So when you all the text for a slide lives in one of two places. It either lives in the slide list with text container that's in the document container. Or it lives inside the shape, individual shape. And of course, those shapes are contained ultimately inside the slide container. So when you resave a file, we also rewrite the document container. That's a given. And so that would include the slide list with text container. So any text that appears on that slide in the outline will get rewritten there. And then any text in any shapes on the slide would be part of the shapes on that slide, which would get rewritten. So yeah, it never goes back and refers to some part of that old slide in the new record. Yeah. Okay?
The second question is the fast way to extract all embedded objects.
All embedded objects.
I couldn't imagine that it would be similar to the text extraction.
You could naively do it, yes, according using the same sort of algorithm where you just go through, look at the record headers, look at the record type for XOLA object. External OLA object. You'll see all these EX things, they all stand for external. It's just an artifact of PowerPoint's memory model where we had shapes and we had things that hang off of shapes. Those are all external objects. So that's like EX video, EX movie, EX object. They're all things that were external to the original PowerPoint memory model. They were extensions and external. So you could take that approach. To do it correctly is not that much harder. You need to parse the document container. Inside the document container, there's a record that is the XOLA obj list, and that has a list of atom records, and inside there's a bunch of persist IDs for the current, because again, there could be dead OLE objects in the file, OLE objects, and that'll give you the persist IDs, and you just look those up in the persist directory table that you constructed already, and away you go, and then you can go and grab them. So it's not that much harder to find, to really parse the real content the right way for the OLE objects. Yeah, a little bit trickier to do some other things, but that one's not too hard. Yep, other questions? Yeah. The document inspector. Oh, you mean the PowerPoint feature?
Yeah.
So document inspector was new for 2007, I think. And 2007 always full saves binary files. It never incrementally saves them. So effectively, yes, because it never incrementally saves. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, we don't have incremental save starting with 2007. Binary, we turned it off explicitly. And for XML files, we couldn't perform the same trick that we did for binary. For binary, right, you have a file on disk, we could just call set file size and make the file grow on disk. And if that failed, like, the file was still there. Like, you know, we didn't corrupt the file. Like, you know, it just failed. And okay, the file didn't grow, and we could return failure to the users, hey, you're out of disk space. But the XML file format, because it's zip, you can't just grow the file and shove records at the end. You got to update some other things in between. You got to update manifests and things, and so you have the potential to corrupt the file if you just try to modify all the file in place. That's why PowerPoint does the same thing that Word does, is we save everything to a separate file and then go whoop and swap it with the original at the end, because otherwise we might corrupt your files, and users hate it when we do that. Sometimes through no fault of our own, right? You know, you're in the middle, you get a power failure halfway through the save. Oops, sorry. Can't do that. Other questions? You got a minute and a half, and I'm sure you're all hungry, so you can go whenever you want. More questions? All right, cool, thank you.
Thank you.